Raph Epstein on ABC Radio Melbourne.
So if you don't know, 9 full years ago, as soon as I was given the great privilege and chance to do this job, I thought, I'm going to do Changing Tracks. I stole this concept from the BBC. It was a Radio 1 thing that I used to listen to every Wednesday morning. Actually, they used to do it on their version of Triple J, Radio 1. And they stole it. It's been going around the BBC like since the 50s or the 60s. It used to be called Your Tune. They changed it to Changing Tracks because Radio 1 are cool and down with the youth. So today, only for the second time, I wrote the Changing Track, if that's okay. I wrote the very first one to introduce you all to the concept. And I just thought, it's been a bit of a year. And I wanted to try and find a way to kind of sum up the year. So if that's okay, I'm sort of expecting to get a lot of disappointment and hate on the text message. And that's okay too. I just wanted to reflect on the year. This isn't, if you want to talk politics and all that sort of stuff, you'll get it. Go, feel free. I just thought I'd do something a little bit different. Mary Guerin's in the chair next week. And then you'll get into your summer programming. And then your whole ABC Radio Melbourne slate is back as usual next year, mid-Jan. So 16 minutes to six, your last Changing Track for the year. And this week's Changing Track is written by me. 25 years of keeping myself sane and sensible on air. Standing on the side of Mount Thredbo as a lone survivor is pulled from a ski lodge destroyed in a landslide. Walking down London streets hours after terrorists killed people on the underground. Walking down the streets in Dili, East Timor, days after a Dutch journalist was killed by Indonesian militia. But this year, walking through the empty streets of the city of Melbourne, it may well be the scariest and most all-encompassing story of my life. End of May, first wave over, state opposition furious we couldn't visit Mum on Mother's Day, and then the news, the virus had leaked from the hotels. Case numbers jumped to 40 in just one day. And just before this show on a Friday, a senior government insider told me it's going to get worse before it gets better. But my stomach really dropped when they said we could get as many as 10,000 cases a day. When do you give up contact tracing, I asked. Maybe when we have a run of 200 cases a day, was the response. At that time, we still hadn't had more than 100, let alone 700. So with that in my mind, what was I supposed to do when family rang me in tears, terrified that my brother-in-law could die? He works in a major emergency department. Was he at risk? As I spoke to you, every single phone line on the phone in front of me was a blinking red light, often blinking in anger, just like my Twitter feed, a fire with fury at Dan Andrews or in furious defence of him. A whole lot of people sent me the case numbers every day, and I tweeted them out before the Premier's press conference, before he gave them out. Government minders sent me angry messages. But it wasn't just a number. It measured our fate. It was our communal barometer, a direct judgment on whether we'd end up with people queuing up for ventilators. Towers had been shut down, suburbs targeted for testing. There was a ring of steel, but even tougher measures were coming. The pressure not to do that was intense. Federal ministers said we should aim, quote, to avoid having to go to higher levels of lockdown. I had never been to any of the Premier's press conferences, but neither he nor the Chief Health Officer would do any media. So how else do you ask the questions your audience once asked? You're right to go, came the familiar refrain. 428 new cases, 3 people dead, 31 people in ICU and more than 100 others in hospital. The Premier warning people not to pretend this is over because we want it to be. This was before the attacks from politicians and journalists. I asked if Canberra listened to Victoria any less because of the problems we'd had. I don't think so, Dan Andrews said. This is something that moves very fast. I asked Brett Sutton if this was under control. We have not turned the corner, he said. A number of people will die. It has to turn around. It didn't, and the harsh lockdown began. Within days, we were told, 5K limit, 8 p.m. curfew, masks everywhere. the vitriolic political attacks, the frenzied defence and the online conflagration. It seemed unprecedented then, and I knew it was when I received a friend's email. "Sign the petition," he wrote. "The governor should sack the premier." A premier whose rhetoric, my friend told me, is worryingly reminiscent of the former Eastern Bloc's socialist leaders. He went on to write, "This is how oppressive regimes start, 1933 in Germany with the Nazis. And my friend is German." It was that kind of year. During the worst of the horror in aged care, Julie called in. In one home, staff had been sent away but not replaced. Julie, there for COVID testing, described an unsupervised dementia ward where COVID-positive residents wandered around infecting others. A week later, Julie had been the only human able to sit and hold the hand of a woman in her 80s whose partner had just died. And this woman told Julie, "I just want to die." Like you, most of the time, I never saw the faces of anyone other than my family and my workmates. But I knew exactly what the city was thinking and feeling. Hundreds of texts every minute. Talkback lines full for hours. A radio station has never felt more like the nerve centre of a city, as we all went through the same thing at the same time. It was an emotional roller coaster. And at the front of the ride were these extraordinary press conferences. But seeing people's faces, in the flesh, without a mask, I worried and I wondered, when would I ever see everyone's faces again? So my changing track for this week and this year is from the Angels.